A warning from Jace Medical. Even if the war stops, the shortages won't. Because ships move slowly, the US has been running on oil that set sail months ago. But that buffer is running out. Asia is already feeling it. Europe is feeling it. Africa is feeling it. Demand is increasing as supply tightens, and it's what's been raising your power bill and gas prices. But those last ships to the US just arrived, and even if things stabilize, the ripple effects will last much, much longer, because oil doesn't just power your car. It powers the systems that make and deliver your medications, and when supply slows, shortages begin. The difference between panic and peace is preparation with Jace. The Jace case is a doctor-prescribed emergency supply of essential medications and prescription antibiotics delivered right to your door so you're ready before you need it. No waiting, no scrambling, just control. Get your Jace case today at jace.com.
In the following podcast, dialogue has been condensed from trial transcripts. The story is a recreation of an actual criminal case that occurred in Australia, and it has been adapted into a podcast from one of my films, and it may not be suited for those of a weak disposition. So as always, sit back, shut that pleasure-giving mouth of yours, smoke 'em if you got 'em, and enjoy. In this episode, I will be looking at the brutal murders of Australian serial killer Ivan Milat.
There are places to go. Perhaps to get away. Perhaps to die. It's impossible to know one's motivation. Unless you are the one who is motivated. But make no mistake, there are some places that are closer to the abyss than others.
Ivan Milat was born on December 27th, 1944, the fifth of 14 children, to a Croatian immigrant laborer named Stephen Milat and Margaret Elizabeth Pendleston, an Australian national. The impoverished Milat family initially lived on a rural farm in Bosley Park, 36 kilometers from West Sydney, before relocating to Liverpool, South Wales. Liverpool, Australia, not England. By all accounts, Milat's parents were strict with the kids, educating and disciplining their children, and sent them all to Catholic schools. It has been noted that Ivan's father was an alcoholic and regularly beat all the children. The Milat boys were well known to the local police and were used to handling knives and firearms, spending their afternoons shooting at targets in their parents' yard. Siblings of Milat recalled him displaying antisocial and psychopathic behavior at a young age, such as abusing animals and attacking them with machetes. And he'd spent time in a juvenile detention center by the age of 17. And I guess if there was such thing as a bad apple, he was that. And Ivan was a born hunter who liked to think of himself as a man's man. Which I guess is fitting, because the creature he liked to hunt the most were man. And I suppose that there are those who don't care too much for animals. Might argue that if you want to kill a creature with two legs,
kill a kangaroo. After all, they were everywhere.
But honestly, where's the fun in that? Welcome to Sydney, Australia. The starting point of more than one young person's dream vacation. First time away from parents. Party. Get laid.
The ultimate combination of freedom, adventure, and ease of travel. Stunning beaches and scenery. A culture made for the young.
and had 100,000 backpackers a year starting their journey in Sydney. It's safe to say that the shops won't make a lot of money selling the filthy fuckers soap, but certainly will break even selling condoms and vegan food.
But hey, I don't want to judge, because judging ain't my business.
But between 1989 and 1993, hordes of backpackers arrived in the kangaroo-loving city with the expectations of getting fucked. To which some of those unprivileged few will get fucked, but not the way they planned it.
Oh, jeez, I just think I gave away the whole plot to this thing. And I guess 26-year-old Paul Onions had the same ambitions when he landed in Sydney's airport.
And although with a name that would bring tears to your eyes, the air conditioner repairman from England thought he was tough enough to travel on his own. And why not? Pussies travel in groups. Dicks travel on their own. And even though Australia has one of the most intimidating landscapes in the world,
the wannabe tough guy wanted to explore it all by himself, by hitchhiking. It was in January of 1990, just outside of Sydney,
when he was approached and offered a ride by a jovial Aussie who introduced himself as Bill. It was during that journey that the jovial Bill stopped being so jovial, and the small talk ended abruptly.
And in Onion's opinion, seemed to take on a more sinister tone.
It became a bit anti-racial to the, you know, the immigrants who were living in Australia. You found them, you know, quite offensive, really. I was so happy to get the ride. And then for all of a sudden, I thought, oh no. First go, I got the nutter. That was a really sure reaction. And then for some reason, we just started to slow down a bit. And just kept looking in his mirror. And if you can drive yourself, you find it a bit odd. That was his excuse, really, to get some cassettes from under the seat to put some music on. Well, it just seemed odd because there was actually cassettes in between us. But I was pulled over, and he got out to search under the seat. I thought, you know, there's two sides to your brain. There's the calm side saying, oh, you should be happy this guy's giving you a lift. What are you worried about? Then there's the other side saying, hold on, there's something doesn't feel right there. He just bent over, looked under the seat, just pulled out a revolver.
Either it was Onion's sixth sense or Mulat's bad aim, but he dodged three bullets and was able to run down the road. He was picked up by a good Samaritan as the man who called himself Bill retreated back to his 4x4. And although Onions reported the incident to the cops, they never got back to him. At least he got away. But not all were so lucky, because only a short distance away,
in Belang Lo State Forest,
there was a last resting place for two hitchhikers that I guess couldn't run so fast. Joanne Walters and Carolyn Clark,
the pretty 22 and 21-year-old,
had met at a hostel in King's Cross, Sydney. The two English girls, traveling far from home, struck up an instant friendship, a friendship that would lead to their demise. It hasn't been recorded which one of them decided that they should hitchhike, but it's now generally agreed on that it was a bad idea. Two girls were last seen on Easter weekend, 1992, hitchhiking, getting into a 4x4 with a man. They were later discovered by two joggers with 4 months' worth of rod. Both girls had been raped, tortured, and cut up, and then shot. Not exactly in that order. Their spines had been severed to cause paralysis with a hunting knife, and they lay there paralyzed, watching each other being raped, and then they were used as living target practice, with their bodies left for the dingoes. But I guess Australian dogs don't have a taste for English Rose, because their bodies were left for the maggots and the heat. And investigators for forced to admit that they may have a serial killer who got his rocks off severing young girls' spines and fucking them while they lay there in a state of paralysis. The Malats had a well-earned reputation for being a notoriously violent outback-dwelling family of hillbillies who came from a very shallow gene pool, if you get my drift, and I ain't asking. The 14 siblings, instead of playing with toys, played with guns. By all accounts, they became pretty good at killing, but none of them as good as a younger brother, who seemed to excel at it. At an early age, Ivan Milat got involved in petty crime, once robbing a cab driver, shooting him in the back, and leaving him a leg mental. People closest to Ivan said the thing that was strange is he had no interest in pussy, only firearms. While others went to bed reading their titty magazines, he did the same, but with weapons. I guess happiness really is a warm gun. When the first tortured and mutilated corpses turned up, there were more than one detective who figured it was someone in the Milat family. But as the 14 siblings were tighter than the Velcro straps on a retard's running shoes, cops knew it weren't gonna be easy to make one of them start singing. And the hillbilly fucker, who liked to dress up like a nutter, were now roaming the outback with impunity. But it was when Sydney cops started going through their database, reviewing every ass-fucking homicidal maniac, they found 2,000 potential suspects. Well, I guess Australia really is an island of convicts. But either way, they knew they had a problem that wasn't going to be easily resolved. It was a year later when kangaroo-riding cops were no closer to solving the crime. When a man, probably Australian, were out gathering firewood, when he stumbled across a human skull. It was at this point that a task force was put together of over 300 police officers searching the area for any missing backpackers. It was then they came across the bodies of two more victims. Those of missing Australian James Gibson and his girlfriend Deborah Everest. And although the 19-year-olds hadn't known each other long, they were now linked for eternity in the abyss. It was in 1989 that they'd set out to a music festival together. Their parents had advised them not to hitchhike. I guess they didn't take that advice. The couple, who'd been missing for 4 years, identified by dental records. Forensics show that both of them been shot and stabbed multiple times, brutally beaten and fucked. Yeah, both of them. I guess I can still tell that after 4 years. And although it was Australia's biggest task force ever, they were searching in a barren wasteland that stretched over 40 square kilometers, like looking for a brown M&M in a pair of a retard's shitty underwears.
The winner is Cindy. Australia.
And with Australia recently winning its bid for the Olympics, they needed to solve this embarrassing problem. Lickety-split, because no one were interested in visiting a country where there's an ass-fucker loose, except for maybe Greece and parts of London, England. The task force put together, now calling itself AIR, were looking for saving Australia from certain embarrassment, if they weren't already embarrassed enough by Crocodile Dundee. With investigators now expecting there were plenty more bodies hidden out in the never-ending forest, they increased the number of their task force.
But I suppose be careful what you look for, because you may find it.
21-year-old Simone Schmiedel was the next hitchhiker to turn up. Known as Simi to her friends, the lone backpacker, a self-proclaimed feminist who said she wouldn't let men stop her from enjoying the country's natural beauty. and told friends not to worry because she was carrying a knife. Either way, when she set out on January 91, against her friend's advice, the death clock was now ticking for Simi on her way to Melbourne to meet her mother. There were an appointment that she wouldn't keep. I'd like to say it were a quick death, but I'd be lying. It was with the very own knife that she was carrying that Simi had both of her hands cut off. Then next, her spine was severed. Now unable to fight back, the terrified girl was driven 30 minutes into the forest. Then beaten, raped, tortured. Yeah, you get the idea. And when she didn't make her appointment with her mother, 4 days later, now her mother knew something was wrong. Mothers can tell that sort of thing. But with the girl's distinct looks, many remember seeing her on the trail, but couldn't remember when or where.
A warning from Jace Medical. Even if the war stops, the shortages won't. Because ships move slowly, the U.S. has been running on oil that set sail months ago. But that buffer is running out. Asia is already feeling it. Europe is feeling it. Africa is feeling it. Demand is increasing as supply tightens, and it's what's been raising your power bill and gas prices. But those last ships to the U.S. just arrived, and even if things stabilize, the ripple effects will last much, much longer, because oil doesn't just power your car. It powers the systems that make and deliver your medications, and when supply slows, shortages begin. The difference between panic and peace is preparation with Jace. The Jace case is a doctor-prescribed emergency supply of essential medications and prescription antibiotics delivered right to your door so you're ready before you need it. No waiting, no scrambling, just control. Get your Jace case today at jace.com.
Meet 20-year-old Anja Habschied. The pretty young German had just graduated and wanted to see the world. Her and her boyfriend, 21-year-old Gabor Neugenbar, started out traveling through Indonesia. But it was a last-minute change of plans that they decided to go to Australia for Christmas. A change of plans that would be fatal. And it was there that they vanished into thin air. The young Kraut couple were eventually found with 2 years worth of rot. Mutilated, beheaded, and raped. And with forensics showing that none two of the killings were alike, the kangaroo riding cops now figured there might be more than one killer. But there was one thing that everyone could agree on. That the murders were the most brutal Australia had ever seen.
And they weren't gonna go away.
There are fears of another murder victim in the notorious Belanglo State Forest, with police saying bones found there are almost certainly human.
We now have 7 bodies recovered. Notwithstanding that we don't know the cause of death in the present case, but we do have a serial killer.
Die australische Polizei hat in einem Waldgebiet bei Sydney.
Police in Australia has stepped up the hunt for a serial killer.
Australia.
And that was 7 young people on a slab with passports spread over 3 different countries. The murders were now becoming a public relations shitstorm. Come to Australia for the weather. Leave for your safety. It had been 5 months since police had received their first call from Paul Onions telling them what had happened in the forest. But it was now that they finally realized that the location, description of the incident, and its perpetrator fit perfectly with what witnesses had come forward with pertaining to the murdered hitchhikers. And the finger kept pointing to someone in the Malad family. But which one? There were 14 siblings, all capable of murder, with the 14 of them all living in the same house and not known to be rats. Cops now had the family under surveillance, but they needed to catch someone lickety-split before more corpses started turning up. There was a criminal psychologist who came forward with the theory. who believed that it were two people committing the crimes. Two people who knew the area, had been raised with violence, and perhaps had a bond, either marriage or family, or both. And they figure one or both of them had been sexually abused when they were children. It's scary how right they were, almost down to every detail. And now it seemed that half of New South Wales were pointing their stinky Australian fingers at Ivan Millat. After all, forensics had shown that it wasn't just a murder. There was someone, or someones, who enjoyed what they were doing. And that dug a rare breed. Perhaps the same breed that would fuck their brothers and sisters and all live out in the middle of nowhere in the same house. Hell, he'd even married his cousin. But there would be two things that would lead to the eventual downfall of Ivan Millat. Because in the end, it was Carolyn Clark, not the feminist, who ended up fighting back. And when investigators found her maggot-eaten corpse, she was holding a fist full of hair. Millat's hair. And maybe that's why he shot her 17 times in the head. And on May 22nd, 1994, when they went to his house, the one that he shared with his 13 brothers and sisters, and went to his room, it was like a goddamn museum of the damned, containing the last worldly goods, souvenirs, if you will, of the young people that he had fucked and laid to waste, along with the weapons and the ammunition that matched each of the cadavers. And in the end, I guess Millat figured that his business were killing. With all those backpackers running around, business were good. But like a lot of entrepreneurs, he got greedy and he fucked up.
Sleeping bags, jewelry, cosmetics. It was a who's who of the identification process, and it was all in Millat's closet. It was hard to come up with a good excuse when every item in the closet led the cops to one of the victims. But Millat didn't even try. He had a smirk on his face like he just ate a shit sandwich, and he liked it. With one officer commenting, "If this ain't evil, it'll do until evil gets here." Police had had Millat's house under surveillance that had commenced on February 26, 1994. And they'd learned that Millat had sold his silver Nissan shortly after the discovery of the bodies of Clark and Walters. Police had also confirmed that Millat had not been working on the days of the murders. Investigators were able to eventually make a connection between the killings and the attempted murder of backpacker Paul Onions in January 1990, and they flew him over to Australia, where he was able to help in their investigation. And he identified Ivan Millat as the man who'd picked him up when he was hitchhiking and attempted to murder him. And as it seemed that Paul Onions was the only survivor, he would be crucial in the trial. There were at least 12 more murders that they thought could be linked to Millat, but they couldn't be proven. And when they questioned Millat, they were just met with that same stupid smirk on his face. It was on May 23rd that he appeared in court, but did not enter a plea. On May 31st, he was additionally charged with 7 backpacker murders. Ivan Millat's trial opened at the Supreme Court of New South Wales in Sydney, Australia, on March 26th, 1996, where he pleaded not guilty, and despite overwhelming evidence against him, he was confident that he would be found completely innocent of the crimes that he had been accused of. Where he told the judge that his basic defense was, "I didn't do it. It wasn't me. And I don't know who did it. And it was up to the court to prove his guilt, not for me to prove my innocence." His defense argued that in spite of the evidence, there was no non-circumstantial proof Millat was guilty, and attempted to shift the blame to other members of his family
particularly his brother Richard. 145 witnesses took the stand, including members of Malat's family, several of which who provided him with alibis. On June 18th, Malat gave evidence himself, and again repeated the stance. The court couldn't prove he'd done anything, and any evidence was circumstantial. But I guess the court disagreed. And on July 27, 1996, after 18 weeks of testimony, a jury found Ivan Malat guilty of the murders. He was given a life sentence on each count without the possibility of parole. He was also convicted of the attempted murder, false imprisonment, and robbery of onions, for which he received 6 years imprisonment on each count. The court was to note the brutality of Malat's crimes, with not one single incident standing out more than the other, but couldn't help revisit several elements of his crimes. The 19-year-old James Gibson skeleton had been found in a fetal position, and it showed 8 stab wounds. A large knife had cut through his body and upper spine, causing paralysis, and stab wounds to his back and chest would have punctured his heart and lungs. And as well as both he and his girlfriend being raped and sodomized. Among her many injuries, a large hunting knife had been broken off in her forehead. The coroner had revealed that there was no evidence that any of Malat's victims had died instantly, and they had possibly lived a day, sometimes even two, enduring torture, rape, and then a slow death. Malat smirked and was often seen joking with his lawyer throughout the trial, and seemed to show no remorse or stress at hearing these horrific tales. Australian police maintain that Ivan Malat could have been involved in many more murders, and that there are several that fit his MO. On July 18th, 2005, Malat's lawyer made a deathbed confession that Malat had been assisted on 2 of the murders of backpackers by his sister. A claim that couldn't be investigated because the sister had died 2 years earlier, and Malat was still proclaiming his innocence. And although ordered by the courts to give evidence in several other backpacking disappearances, Malat refused. And the crimes to this day still remain unsolved, although linked to Ivan Malat. But in the end, Malat would take his secrets with him to the grave. Because Ivan Malat, Australia's notorious backpacker killer, died at age 74 on October 27th, 2019, at 4:07 a.m. He passed away in the medical wing of the Long Bay Prison in Sydney after being diagnosed with terminal stomach cancer in May of that year. And I'm guessing that there weren't too many people who were shedding a tear. Most recent police reports believe there are now 20 other victims that can be attributed to the brutality of Ivan Milan. But in the end, we'll never know. And the family of those victims will eventually pass without ever seeing justice and having closure.
Bang, bang. I bet you thought that you could run away from me. You had me praying on my knees like it was Sunday. You out here running over hearts like you a Humvee. Just know I'm coming, I hope you don't get too comfy. Yes, I remembered every word that you can't take back. Now I'm looking for revenge and I can't stay back. I got you running through the jungle where it ain't safe at. Just know I'm coming, I hope you don't get too comfy. Ooh, yeah, I've been searching far and wide and I'm so far away from home. And when I find you, I'm gonna make you pay what you owe. I hope you know. I bet you thought that you could get away. I'm coming after you like every day.
You can't run until your trouble has begun.
Watch out, cause I'm coming for you.
You can't run.
I bet you thought that you could get away.
You can't run.
I'm coming after you like every day. I bet you thought that you could run away from me. You had me praying on my knees like it was Sunday. You out here running over hearts like you a Humvee. Just know I'm coming, I hope you don't get too comfy. Yes, I remembered every word that you can't take back. Now I'm looking for revenge and I can't stay back. I got you running through the jungle where it ain't safe at. Just know I'm coming, I hope you don't get too comfy. Yeah, I've been searching far and wide and I'm so far away from home. That you could get away.
You can run.
I'm coming after you like every day.
You can't run until your trouble has begun.
Watch out, cause I'm coming for you.
You can't run.
I bet you thought that you could get away.
You can't run.
I'm coming after you like every day.
You can't run until your trouble has begun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can't run.
Bang, bang.
I'm coming for you.
A warning from Jace Medical. Even if the war stops, the shortages won't. Because ships move slowly, the U.S. has been running on oil that set sail months ago. But that buffer is running out. Asia is already feeling it. Europe is feeling it. Africa is feeling it. Demand is increasing as supply tightens, and it's what's been raising your power bill and gas prices. But those last ships to the U.S. just arrived, and even if things stabilize, the ripple effects will last much, much longer, because oil doesn't just power your car. It powers the systems that make and deliver your medications, and when supply slows, shortages begin. The difference between panic and peace is preparation with Jace. The Jace case is a doctor-prescribed emergency supply of essential medications and prescription antibiotics delivered right to your door so you're ready before you need it. No waiting, no scrambling, just control. Get your Jace case today at jace.com.